address a question I think that was asked yesterday, and we may return to this later when we move on to the next part. But somebody asked a question. According to the Chachamim, the din of a mukas eitz, if a girl is a mukas eitz and doesn't tell the husband when they get married, so Reb Meir said that mukas eitz bein hikir ba bein lo hikir ba ksubas amasai. That doesn't matter. She still gets a ksuba of 200 zuz. It doesn't matter whether he knew or didn't know. And the Chachamim say hikir bein hikir lo hikir ba ksubasa is mana. She gets only 100 zuz because she's not considered a psula for these purposes. So, firstly, the question was asked by some of you: why isn't, according to the Chachamim, why isn't it kiddushei tos? Right? If the argument is that she only gets a ksuba of 100 zuz, it means he thought she was one thing, which was entitled to 200. Now he thinks she's only 100, something which is entitled to 100. So there is a machlokas in the Gemara. There was a machlokas in the Gemara on that sugya. Daf Yerachon based off you based on a big machlokas on Orion. When we say that there's tainas besulim, and if she's not a besula, that she loses her ksuba, what does that mean? Does it mean that she loses her entire ksuba? Or does it mean that she only gets 100 zuz? In other words, assuming what we believe happened in the end is that she was not a besula when she got married. She had the bia before she got married. So what is the din? What is the din now? She gets married, becheskas besula, turns out she's not a besula. Obviously she doesn't get masayim. Does she even get a mona? So that was a machlokas. But on the assumption, I think we paskin that hareza mekach tos, is mekach tos legamre, right? That she's entitled only she's entitled to nothing. So why, according to the Chachamim, when it comes to mukas eitz, do we say that ben hikir ba ben lo hikir ba ksubas amana? So I understand hikir ba ksubas amana, she's not a psula, so she's given the ksubas ba'ula. But why is it that if she didn't tell him, why is she get anything? Because obviously the fact that he thought she was a psula and she gets 200 tos, now it turns out she is something that only gets 100 tos, that should be a mekach tos. That was one question. There was another question. There's a second question went off that. I forget what the other one was, but I'll come back to that in a. I assume we'll probably answer it. A second question you asked was, and according to Rabbi Meir, what if she knew she was a mukas eitz and didn't tell him? Right? In other words, and let's say he asked. You said if he asked, right? Someone you asked this question. If he asked, what would the din be? So I gave you the chocolate babka metaphor. And I said that it's unless it's a tanai in the kiddushin, I'm not sure that it's that it matters. So I asked Rashachter the question. So he told me a story about a shayla that was sent through Chaim Ozer from New York about a case of a girl who was a grusha. And whenever she would date guys, she would say, are you a kohen? If the guy said he was a kohen, she wouldn't date him. So then, one guy she met, she asked him to kohen. He said no. So she dated him. She fell in love. They got married. And during the week of Shavuot Brachos, she told him, by the way, I'm a kohen. And she was furious, and we said, we're getting in a taxi cab right now, and they're going to the Rav of Masada Kedushin, and we're going to have a get written. And when the taxi cab got to the traffic light, the chassan jumped out and was never heard from again. She sent the shayla to Rav Chaim Ozer. Question was, could they be matir on the grounds of Kedushei Taos? He was matir on other grounds, but he said that unless she repeated grounds which are very interesting, very novel, and very important, but not for our discussion now. He thought that unless she said something under the chuppah, that there's not enough of an umman. There are girls who would marry grushas, who would marry a kohen if the kohen's willing to marry her, because they're desperate to be married. So you never know; it's possible. And even though she asked all the guys she dated, nonetheless, there's not an umdana the mukach that we can say that without explicit, at least mentioning it under the chuppah, it's not the arm shul b'libov lev kaladam that you can say that she can remarry without a get. Right. So that was Anyway, so I think I sort of said that almost that yesterday in Shia, which is if she mentioned made it a Tanai in the Kiddushin, so then you could say, then it wouldn't matter what she made, what the Tanai was in Kiddushin. If you made it Tanai with her, I'm going to ask that you don't like Chokobaga. So then too, you know, same thing. But if he doesn't, that's very nice that he didn't tell her that she likes Chokobaga. But nonetheless, they're, even though when they're dating, she told him she liked Chokobaga. Nonetheless, she is going to be Mikudeshes. That's that grounds for Kiddushei Tohus. Okay, now going back to the first question, which I think is the question of a greater import. Why is it according to the Chachamim? Why is it that she gets a ksuba v'mana? We don't say it's a mekach tohus, so she gets nothing. Rameir, she I understand. Rameir says that she is a besula, not in the sense of having besulim, but in the sense that she's never been known. She's never known a man, right? She's never had bia, and therefore, Rabbi Meir said she gets a ksuba masayim. That makes sense. There's no mekach tohus there. But what are the chachamim thinking? Now, if you look in the Gemara, actually, so Adin, and this wasn't your question, but whoever asked the question about Mekach Tos, who asked the question about Mekach Tos? What? Okay. So, the Gemara actually has three deos as to what the din is by Mukaseit. Deo number one, on Yud Aleph Amud Beis, I don't think it was Rami Bar Chama, I forget who it was. It was... Rami Bar Chama. It was Rami Bar Chama. Rami Bar Chama said that if he knew that she was a Mukaseitz, then Ksubasa is Masayim according to Rabbi Meir. It's Mana according to the Chachamim. What if Lo Hikirba? Rami Bar Chama says, L'chuleyama, she has no Ksuba. It's Mekach Tos. Do you understand that position? Sure. It makes perfect sense. The Machlokas is, what is the nature of Mukaseitz? But if she doesn't tell him that she's a Mukaseitz, that's a Mekach Tos. Rava, number one, which the Gemara says Rava eventually backed out of, and Rashi explains why, Rava, number one, was that according to Rabbi Meir, Bein Hikirba, Bein Lo Hikirba, so Ksubasa is a, you can look there if you want, by the way, it's not a top secret. Rava says, Bein Hikir Ba, Bein Lo Hikir Ba, according to Rabbi Meir Masayim, according to the Rabbanon, Hikir Ba Mana, Lo Hikir Ba Velo Klum. So the Chachamim, in effect, are arguing on two things. One is that they believe that a Mukaseitz is only entitled to a Ksuva Mana, and two, they believe it's a Mekach Tos. The Gemara ultimately, and Rashi makes a very important error in the Gemara, which is what some of you were asking. Don't ask why he makes this comment, but was it possible that Rameir would hold Hikir ba Masayim, that Lo Hikir ba Mana? So Rashi says it's impossible. Why? Because if Lo Hikir ba, if you're going to make her forfeit anything, then it's a Mekach Taos, and therefore she gets nothing. Now, Rava's final maskana, the one I mentioned to you, is that Rameir says, Bein Hikir Ba Bein Lo Hikir Ba Masayim. Chachamim say, Bein Hikir Ba Bein Lo Hikir Ba Mana. So now, this really just highlights the question. What kind of a ksuba did he write for her? How much?
200.
He wrote 200. And now the Chachamim say that she only gets 100. So why don't you ask Rashi's Kasha on the last teretz of the Gemara as well? If you're making her forfeit 100 zuz of what she was offered, so then she should forfeit everything because it's a Mekach Tos. Nope. That's a good kasha, right? That's in effect what you were asking. So what's the answer to the question? So if you look in the Rashba, which you don't have in front of you, the Rashba on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis is bothered by the question. And he says the following. He says, Taima lefi she'ena hata'a gemura. Mishum de lo batil chino legamre, ki be'ula de mushemes lefana. So he says that it's not a hata'a gemura. Why? Because it's not like her chen is batel. It's not like she's been used by someone else. She's not mizuhemes lefanav. So this is really, really, really interesting.
Who said this?
What?
Who said this?
The Rashba. But he's bothered by the question. So he says, so then why does she only get 100 zuz? Why then does she only get 100 zuz? Mati?
Isn't there the concept that no matter what you write in Ksuba, there is, even if you didn't write Ksuba at all,
No, but why does she get only 100 zuz?
I'm saying because there is like, you know, the Tanayim, that there is the institution of Ksuba that whether or not you write it or not.
But why does she get 200?
Well, because I guess they're viewing her like a Psula, like a Ba'ula.
Right, so the reason she only gets 100 is because that's what she's entitled to. The question is, why is she even entitled to the 100 if after all she has deceived him? So again, Bishlam al Rabbi Meir, she may have deceived them, but she's deceived them over something that we say Mabakah. Meir says, he doesn't care whether or not she's got this Dahaiman. All he cares about is that she didn't sleep with another man. That's what he's interested in. He wants to be her first man. So I understand Rabbi Meir's position, but the Chachamim, once you say that she's not entitled to what he promised her in the Ksuba, because she isn't what he wrote in the Ksuba, she's not Bisultada, so why does she get anything? So the Rashba says again, because it's not a Hata'a Gimura. And this is enormously, enormously significant because we tend to think about Mekach Tos in binary categories. What do I mean by that? Either is a Mekach Tos, or it's not a Mekach Tos. In other words, look, I buy an object from you. Right? It turns out there's a little chip in the paint on the object. I want to change the value. Maybe, you know, I have an aesthetic thing. Oh, God, it's horrible. I look at that chip on paint. It's terrible. Most people look at it and say, okay, big deal. You know, if I were in the store and I had a choice between two of the objects, and one of them had a slight chip in the paint, so I choose the one without it. But you know what? What if there was only one? It was the floor model. It had a slight chip in the paint, and he wasn't offering me a discount. Well, guess what? If I needed the thing, would I buy it? The answer is yes. If that's the answer, then it's not a Mekach Tos because I didn't see the chip in the paint because he didn't tell me about it. Because it was a little bit, it's not nice. Now, if he covered it up a little bit, you know, he plastered it over a little bit, you know, put something on it, made it look like it wasn't there. It's not nice, but I would have bought it anyway. So, again, it's not the nicest thing in the world to do, but it's not a Mekach Tos. Alternatively, it could be something that's significant enough in terms of function or appearance, depending on what you're buying the thing for, that you really say, you know what, this is deception. I don't want this. I wanted something else. You could say such a thing. So it's either yes or it's no. What does it mean? What does it mean to say that, you know what? It's like saying the following. You know, I wanted the Cuisinart. I wanted the 12 horsepower Cuisinart. Because I'm planning on making smoothies with, you know, rocks. Okay, and you sold me the 6 horsepower Cuisinart. And I can use ice, but I can't use rocks. So we're going to say, here's the psalm. You know what? You gave him a Cuisinart. It wasn't a Hata'a Gemura. It had 6 horsepower. So you know what? The 6 horsepower version costs $150 instead of $250. So give him back $100. Now, I grant that maybe the difference between those two is it's apples and oranges because you can't do what I wanted the 12 horsepower Cuisinart to do. In this case, the woman can do perfectly well what he wants to do. Okay, so could a Bula, but the bottom line is, yeah, he'd pay a little less for a mukaseitz. But at the end, you know, it's not worth the same thing. But still, it accomplishes functions. It's a woman for whom he can be her first man. It's essentially what the Rashba is saying. It's not a Hata'a Gemura because lo batil chino legamrei kibu'ula demizuhemes lefanav. You may not like the answer, but it certainly validates the question. And it does suggest the possibility of an in-between category. Now, this, I think, is actually highly significant for a question that we're going to explore in the next sugya as relates to mukaseitz, but more on that when we get there. Did any of you go on in the Gemara to the Mishnah?
You're okay with buying this new category of Hata'a Gemura, but not Chazkas Adin.
What's that?
I mean, he's not really giving a full reason as much as it's convenient to create
another. No, but I think he actually has created a category, and you have to just decide how it fits, how things fit in there. In other words, we have this. Look, in Ona'a, you think about a parallel. Ona'a and Mekach Tovos are two totally different things. Mekach Tovos means, Mekach Tovos, it could even be a fair change of a fair swap of value, but it's not what I wanted. In other words, I'm buying a cow to plow with it, but you give me a Sharnakon, which I can shech, and it's worth plenty of money, but I can't that I can't plow with it. And then I discover, because I can't keep it around, a Sharnakon you got to get rid of, right? You got to. It's not easy to keep around, let's put it that way. So there, I can say the object, that, and I may have charged you fair value for it. Right? In fact, I showed you a Sharnakon at a discount, and you thought you were getting you thought you had bested me because you were getting a shor l'charisha, you know, at a cheap price, but you didn't realize that you were getting the object for exactly what it's worth, right? That's what ta'us is. Ona is, you get the object that you were looking for, but I overcharge you, or you managed to get me to undercharge you because I don't know. Right? That's ona. And in the category of ona, you have something where we say, batel ha-mekach, if the ona is large enough. We have a certain kind of ona, if it's more than a sixth. If the ona is less than a sixth, ha-mekach chayim, and it stands. And if the ona is exactly a six, what's the din? Mekach kayim, but I have to pay back the difference. Right. So in effect, the Rashba, we thought in Mekach Tos, you only have batal mekach or mekach kayim. Now the Rashba is introducing this in-between category where the mekach is kayim, but you reduce the price. Right. And why you presumably you do that because the object functions fully to my satisfaction. Now, apparently a ba'ula doesn't, but a mukaseitz does. Right? How you decide, again, in many cases it's easy to understand how you could decide that. In other words, you could really look, what does a person want X for? He wants X because he needs to do the following tasks, okay? Does the object I gave him, it's defective, but does it do the tasks, or it's not exactly the object you want, but does it do the task? Yes or no? Yes. So then I can say at this point, okay, but there was value difference, so therefore you make him refund the difference in value. Right, it's not just a mekach tos, a chip in the paint, which doesn't change the value. There is a difference in value, but for his purposes, it meets the needs of what he bought it for. Therefore, it's not a hatah gemura. It's easy to judge that often by objects, right? The object does or doesn't perform the function that I bought it for. And if it does, maybe it's not a mekach tos, but I have to refund the value difference. But when you're talking about acquiring a wife, what does he want with this woman? That this issue is no get to. He wants to be with her, right? It doesn't matter whether, see, apparently, it doesn't matter whether she's a, it doesn't matter if she's a ba'ula, basula, mukaseitz, he cannot be with her. She does function in that regard. However, apparently the Rashba thinks that he is particularly focused, he doesn't want to be with a woman who's been with another man. And that could be, as I mentioned yesterday in Shir, right, that could be because he feels that she's always going to be measured against this other guy, so therefore he's decided, I'm not interested in marrying a woman who's had another lover. That's what he can think. If that's the case, So then you could understand why that's called the Mekach Tos, because this is not the kind of woman he wants to be with, because every time he's with her, he's thinking, oh my God, what's going through her head? Right? So therefore, you could say that's a Mekach Tos. Whereas, if she's a Mukaseitz, well, whatever it is that he really wanted, that's different between a Ba'ul and a Mukaseitz, a Basul and a Mukaseitz, which obviously Rabbi Meir couldn't imagine that he really actually cared. Whatever it is that he wanted, so that doesn't affect him forever. That's not an ongoing thing, and therefore it's not a, you know, this one time, the first time he has Bia, he doesn't get the pleasure of breaking the hymen, whatever pleasure there is in that, whatever the reason is. And thus, the Rashba says that it really is the object that he wanted. She functioned for exactly what he wanted. That's more like a chip in the paint. You know, it's a little more than a chip in the paint because it's more like the lower, you know, horsepower model, which does all the things he needs to do anyway, and therefore you have to refund the difference in price. But it's not atah gemura. The object still, the woman. I'm sorry for the unfortunate use of the metaphor, but it meets the needs of what he was trying to accomplish, and therefore it's not a mekach tos. It's not a atah gemura. Okay, that's, I think, not so unreasonable. I'm still waiting. You can come back. Okay. You'll have a chance until we get to the minute next Mishnah. You have a couple of days. If you manage to summon the courage and read the beginning of the Shari Yosher and ready to come present, I will let you. I'm happy to let you come present. And I started reading yesterday. I didn't have enough time to get through it. It's sitting, still sitting on my shots. So you're welcome to go and learn Pilferd from there. And if you want to prepare the beginning, I'll even try to, if I can find the time to do it. And we can talk about that further. But I did try, at least. I did try. It's so hard. It's a language I don't speak so well. So, okay. So anyway, so that I think at least answers the main question you guys had yesterday, which is, I mean, you may not like the answer, but at least you should feel validated that Rashba asked the question. He was bothered by it. Why is it, if you reduce our ksuba, why isn't it in a mekach tos that she should get nothing? And the answer is, because the Rashba says it's not a hata gemura, as opposed to a woman who was a bu'ula mamish, which would be, at least according to some amoraim, hata gemura. If you, by the way, want to explain the other shittas d'amoraim, that even though masayim ain la, but mana yesh la, so then you could use the very same principle. You could argue that the basis behind that is it's not really a mekach tos in the fullest sense, because what does he want a wife for? Bia. You know, the rule is, generally speaking, after one has had bia with his wife the first time, she's not a psula anymore. He will spend the rest of the marriage living with a non-psula. That's just the way it is. So the fact that she wasn't a psula the first time, no. People get past that. That would be what the other sheet in the Gemara would say. Okay. Dovi, you seem... Okay. Fine. So let's come back to our discussion. We already did the Machlokas Rashi and Tosas, and we read the Ramban and the Rashba, who more or less hold like Rashi. I'm just curious if anybody had any further thoughts on the Ramban we read yesterday. Any better explanation we had to offer? Yes, it would have been easier for us to understand if the Ramban had written a little bit more. He explicated a little further, but it's hard to understand. Ramban obviously has something in mind, but I don't really understand what exactly he's driving at. Okay, let's take a look at the Ritva, who really articulates things the most. Generally speaking, it's not that I like to read the Ramban and then the Rashba and then the Ritva, both because of chronological order and because it's sort of a Rebbe Talmud, and then the Rashba was a Talmud of the Ramban. The Ritva was really not a Talmud of the Rashba. The Ritva was a Talmud of the Ra'ah. But clearly he has a lot of the Torah of the Rashba as well. And so the Ritva often really spells things out more than anybody else. And if you're having trouble with the Ramban or the Rashba, very often the very same sheet that appears in the Ritva more fully spells that. Here it's of no help for, I think, explaining that difficult passage in the Ramban. But nonetheless, let's take a look at the Ritva. And Mati, you were up, do up. Okay. So, Haram Gamalil HaRabi Yoshua.
Perish Rashi Zal. Tehad Tikatami in La Ta'anas Besulim, Rabban Gamliel. Bahachi Kamar.
Right, now it's not what Eila Tanis Basulim normally means. Right, again, Daniel Klomar and Hachi Ka'amar are rereadings of texts. So when it says Eila Tanis Basulim, so that means she's not expected to be a Basula. But that's not what it means here. It means that if he found out that she wasn't the Basula, he can't be Mafsir Aksuba because we're toying on her behalf. So Vahachi Ka'amar, Ein Aleim Tanis Basulim, Lahafsida Ksubasa. Uche de Mefarshinan.
Uche de Mefarshinan beBogeres umukas es tami behadayu.
Okay, so there ain lo again. It's not exactly the same thing. It's ain lo beBogeres umukas es. It's ain la tainis besum lafsidak subasa. Why? Because they're not for the moment. We assume they're not expected to be besulim. They're not expected to be besulim, and that's why you can't be mafsid. You can't claim they're not entitled to their ksuba, because they weren't entitled. No one knew, thought they were entitled to the ksuba in the first place. You have no tainus. The Asik Rama Gamliel.
Asik Rama Gamliel. The Amar Parakama. Sheichol Isha Vomar Misha Irastani Ne Nasti. Hilkach Ananami Taaninam La Hachi Kin Refarish Vasi.
Okay, so that's Rama Gamliel, that we're towing on her behalf. And Ha Rabbi Yoshua.
Ha Rabbi Yoshua. The Amar Lo Mepiha Anuchain. Hilkach.
In other words, he can be towing against our lafsidak subasa, and it will work. Why? Right, fine. That's very straightforward. Vitema. Right, so this is Tosfos Kasha and Rashi. If you don't have the gear of Yesh L'Tanis Pesulim, there's no stira. So what was the Gemara asking in the first place? So the Gemara says, Yesh L'Omar
Demaran Zal Hachik Amar, Wee!
It's creative interpretation. Creative interpretation. Yesh la knas doesn't mean the knas of chamishim kesef for ones and mifada. Yesh la knas means she suffers the penalty of losing her ksuba. Wow. That's wild. That's absolutely wild. Right. Now, you know that Rashi didn't have that girsa because Rashi himself writes, Ha Rabbi Yeshua, the law of Lomi Pir Chaim, Hocha Yesh la tainis besulim. Right. It's almost certain that Rashi is indicating that the first brisa is stating Yesh la tainis besulim. That's what the other Rishonim assumed Rashi had, was Goris. Tosa certainly assumes that way. But the Ritva seems to be not acknowledging that Rashi may be another girsa. He doesn't acknowledge that. Because ultimately he's going to say Rashi must hold the first way. Because the second reading is to say it's not Ha Rabbi Gamliel, Ha Rabbi Yeshua, but Ha Rabbi Gamliel, Ha Af Rabbi Yeshua. Or La Dabka Rabbi Gamliel. So he continues, he says, Inami.
Inami. Da'ad kan lo kama Rabbi Yeshua, ela le'inim ksuba, b'pnei she'yesh ala to'an v'chazaka, enu to re'ach v'studo maksida.
Okay. So, he says that it could be that Rabbi Yeshua, why does Rabbi Yeshua believe the husband generally? You know why? Chazaka ein adam toreach besudo mafsida. The guy puts in all the money into the wedding, of making the wedding. He's the one who pays. He's the one responsible for paying for this for the wedding. You know, today weddings are complicated. Bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs are simple because the parents have to deal with one another only. They have to deal with the child. But it's not two different families with two fundamentally, you know, presumably, not always, unfortunately, but the husband and the man, the mother and the father chose to marry each other. They've chosen to be married this long, assuming they're still married. And thus, you can assume, not always, but there's a reasonable degree of they're close enough to the same page that they can probably work things out. But you have a wedding is much more complicated because there are two families, potentially two very different families. And not always do one family like the person who their child has chosen to be their spouse, and certainly not like their families. It doesn't always happen that way. And it comes to splitting the wedding costs, well, that's a little complicated. So today there are all sorts of arrangements, right? It used to be, I don't know if it's still changing, but it used to be that the bride's, used to be that the bride's family, the groom's family paid for a flop, and then later became, as the community became, former flops. Flowers, liquor, orchestra, photographer, and S was Shadel. Okay? Some families just split it. Some families insist on doing it based on the number of guests they invite. But in the time of the Talmud, so the husband was responsible for putting on the wedding. The kala was responsible for her wedding dress and her tashritin and so on, but the husband was responsible for the suda. That's what would appear just reading this Masechta. So, as a corollary to that, the Gemara says in the first parak, we assume that a guy doesn't just put on a wedding so that he can sleep with the girl once and then wake up the next morning and make up a lie and say she wasn't a psula. That's a lot to do. Guys will tell lots of lies to get a girl into bed, perhaps, once, but to have to spend $40,000 on a wedding, less likely to do so. That's a very expensive lie to tell. So anyway, the bottom, that's the chazakom, eidan toreach besuda umasida. So the Ritva says that Rabbi Yeshua, lagabe the ksuba, when he made a wedding, said there, yeshala toan, and it's clear, he means by that, he has a pretty good idea of what he's looking for. I mean, when the man has bia rishona the first night, he might be paying more attention to detail. A rapist is not paying so much attention to detail. He's trying to rape her. It's probably not the easiest act to perform, and so he doesn't have a toan borer. But normally it's a toan, and chazaka and tereach besuda masoda. Lagabe knas, there's no toan borer, so, and there's no chazaka enam tereach besuda masida, because adarabba, he didn't spend anything, and he preferred to lie and say she wasn't the psula, so he doesn't have to pay the knas. So in that case, vadai becheskas besula mukmina laviyesh laknas. So then, what we're really v'chi amrinan? Go ahead.
V'chi amrinan, Rabbi Yeshua, achi kamar. Da'afu Rabbi Yeshua kamar.
Right now, the second brisa is Rabbi Gamliel. Best thing would have been if you had had Rabbi Hananel's girsa, which is Rabban Gamliel. The first brice is everybody. She's becheskas basula. The second brice is Rabban Gamliel, that if she's not a basula, she doesn't lose her ksuba because we are towing on her behalf, because we hold like Rabban Gamliel that if she had been towing us, she'd be believed, therefore we're towing in her stead. But he says, the Lashon
HaShorashi...
Okay. I'm happy for the moment with this in the Ritva. Okay. Fine. So that is the... That's the sugya of Chayreshes. Yes, Moshe.
Okay, so according to the first answer, that Yeshla and Knas means Yeshla Tainas Basulim.
Right.
What is the what about Island is Amla Lo Knas Lo Pitoy?
Right. So that's the problem generally. Right. That's the problem of. Are everything in the Brisa the same thing? But the truth be told, well, which Brisa are you looking at, though?
The first one.
Chareshes Vashot, Vayelon Is Eishem
Knas. I meant the one before that. Island is Aimla Lo Knas Velo Pitoy, or Mindy.
Right, so after Rimini, you mean?
No, but before,
Well, that's a different brisa. So Knas and Pitu in that context clearly means the Knas of Knas of Ones. You have to say the Knas means something different in the next brisa.
Yeah, but then it's not
how is
it a contradiction? For it to be a contradiction.
You're saying a Chareshes Yeshla and Knas. What does Knas mean? It doesn't mean the Knas of Tainus Basulim. It means, and he wouldn't have answered Harabi Meir, right? Right. So that you can see in a few places that we've shown, and there seems to be, in other words, look, even if you go to the second Brisa, Chareshes Shota Belgeres Mukas Eitzlan Tainus Basulim, Eilan Tainus Basulim, according to Rashi, means something different for the Chareshes than it means for the Belgeres and the Mukas Eitz. So that's what you're going to say? It means two different things, even though it's the same one phrase being used in four different cases, and it means one thing in two of the cases and another thing in the other two cases. That's the appeal of Tosas of Pshat, right? That's the appeal of what Tosas says, that according to Tosas, all four things, Ein L'Tanis Pesulim, mean the same thing. And it's consistent with what we normally say Ein L'Tanis Pesulim means. Yeah.
Okay.
Right, the problem, again, with what was the real problem with Tosas' reading? What was the real Achilles heel in Tosas' reading? This is the problem with the machlokas is whether chereshes becheskas mukateitz. Where did we ever find the machlokas Rabbi Gamliel Rabbi Yeshua about that? Rashi is forced to say what he says, which is dochak in the words, as you're pointing out in the earlier brisa, because the Gemara says ha Rabbi Gamliel ha Rabbi Yeshua. Yeah. Okay. Fine. So if there are no more questions about that, so then I'd like to move on into the next Gemara. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, next day or two I will finish the Chazara questions on what we've done until now, and I will send them to you. Alright, who would like to read? Dovi, have you seen the next Gemara?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, then I'll we'll save you for tomorrow then, maybe. Okay, who has seen the next Gemara? Hello. Thank you. What did you say? I'm sorry? Okay. So let's give a little back. Geras ein lo tainas besulim. So what does that mean? What do you think that means before going on? Because the Gemara is going to ask Akash immediately. So what does it mean? Habogeras ein lo tainas besulim. Anybody?
I've used it by the mom, but I can't answer that.
What?
I've used it by the mom, so it's going to discuss it. I can't answer
that. Answer the question, witness.
Okay. Based on Rashi earlier, I would say that Bulgaris Pesula Kol Meile.
What does it mean, Ein Latinus Pesula?
Oh, so that if the husband doesn't find Pesulin, then he has no. Then that's not the time to say that she was Nehola beforehand, or that she wasn't Pesula.
Because you don't expect. Right, you don't expect a Bulgaris to show the signs of a Pesula. Yes, Mike.
Does that mean, according to Rabban, that she would.
Let's wait till the end of the Gemara. Okay. So firstly, as I would say, it means You don't expect the Bogeris to be a Basula in some way. You don't expect to show the signs of a Basula. Now, what are the signs of a Basula? So here's where things get a little bit complicated. The Gemara, the Bavli at least, Beferish, has two kinds of Tainas Basulim. One of them is Tainas Domim, and the other is Tainas Pesach Pasuah. Tainas Domim means that you expect a woman who has not had intercourse yet, when she has intercourse the first time, to bleed. As the hymen is broken, as the hymen tears away from the side, it causes capillary bleeding, and that's what you expect to get. You get that? The Gemara introduces another form of a taina called Tainas Pesach Pasuach. Now, this particular taina is a little bit complicated. On a biological level, so there is a condition, and those of you who eventually are Misadre Kiddushin should be aware of this. More has been written about it recently. There is a condition known as vaginismus. It's a condition in which, either due to physiological reasons or psychological reasons, the muscles that control the vaginal, I guess the canal, tighten up, and it makes it difficult or sometimes impossible to have intercourse. It happens. It's more common than one would think. And it's obviously a very, very serious issue. Most of the time, it's not a difficult problem to deal with. There are professionals who deal with it. But it points to a general observation, which is that any woman, theoretically, can have what you might call a Pesach Sasum. In other words, Bia can be difficult, because if the muscles aren't sufficiently relaxed, for whatever reasons, so penetration can be exceedingly difficult. And therefore, a man could come and say that I didn't find a Pesach Pasuach. Now, what normally will happen after time, after experience, is that even people who experience more difficulty early on eventually experience less difficulty, because whether the muscles stretch, whether people get used to it, whatever else it is, so one will not have the same experience of Pesach Sasum. Now, my suspicion is that when the Chazal talk about that, whether they're aware of it or not, when they say Pesach Pasuach and not Pesach Pasuach, that's really what's leading to it. The hymen itself, you know, once it's broken, so it's not there, and there's no blockage in the vaginal canal. It's really, it's either the hymen, if the hymen is unbreakable, which actually is a medical condition, which requires, you know, a doctor to cut it, it happens on occasion, then that's one thing. That's an akava. But normally, once the hymen is broken, or if there is no hymen, on whatever basis, however that happens, so there is no such thing as a Pesach Sasum on the basis of the hymen. Right? In which case, there really is no such thing as a Pesach Sasum, unless what Pesach Sasum means is that the walls of the vaginal canal simply are too clenched, for whatever their reasons are. Whatever the reasons are. Daniel?
Yeah, but Chazal used the concept of Pesach Batuach as comparable to Tana Damim, in the sense that it's indicative of whether or not she's a Batuach.
Right, so
you're now assuming.
So I'm going to suggest that, I mean, and it's not totally crazy. The more experience, you know, if a woman's had Bia, you know, even when women experience this particular condition, usually once you get through it, you're done, right? And until you get through it, in most cases, she is a Basul, in fact, because you're not capable of having Bia. Thus, again, Chazal are describing a phenomenon that has to be experienced on some level. Whether they understood what was being experienced or not is a different, exactly different question. I have to assume that there's a basis in reality. When there's no hymen, if kalu besuleha, if it really means kalu kol besuleha, then there's nothing in terms of the besulam that's ma'akev that should constitute a Pesach Sasum. The only thing that I can envision is a condition related to this. It doesn't have to be a full-blown condition. Yes. Now, so a husband comes and says, whatever reason, he doesn't say that there's a tainas damim. He says, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. So what he's saying basically is that intercourse was very difficult, and I assume, you know, intercourse was not difficult, and I assume that must be because she's already experienced. That's what it must be. That's the only way I can sort of explain this phenomenon in terms of, you know, something that makes sense biologically that I'm aware of. Yeah.
Presumably all of these are Amoraim, and whoever's participating in the discussion remote than being shown on. Does feel like there's more blockage or something.
Well, there is normally anyway, because the basilum.
That's what I'm saying, so I don't know why we need to extend that to
No, so what I'm saying is, but what about in cases, it's clear, at least according to some Gersos, that there are cases that you don't expect there to be Dumim, but you do, somehow he's tiny. Nonetheless, I found the Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. Particularly when you go back to the Sugya and Daf Tes, which we are not doing, but that day that I gave Shir, there were only a few of you here. I don't remember what the cause was, but I gave Shir about the first Mishnah and the text of the first Mishnah that's in front of Emel Rhyme. So the truth is, this construction of a taina of Pesach Pasuach, a taina that it might constitute a valid taina, is a Bavli, as far as I know, I haven't done full research, is a construction of the Bavli. And it may be based upon a certain reading of Rabbi Lazar and the Yushalmi, which Rabbi Lazar didn't necessarily mean. Rabbi Lazar and the Yushalmi says that Matzah Pischa Pasuach, she is Asura Mishum Safek Sota. What does that mean? What that means in the Yushalmi, Kipshuto, it doesn't mean Pesach Pasuach versus Damin. What the Yushalmi means, what Belazar means, is that when you look in the first Mishnah, when you look at the Mishnayis in the first parak of Ksubos, up until the Mishnah on Dafid Beis Amud Aleph that deals with a Besula getting married, what is every Mishnah, except for the first one, talking about? What's the issue at hand in terms of the husband's claim? What is his concern in every Mishnah? Money. Money. It's all about how does he have to pay or how much does he owe. That's all he cares about. There's no discussion in the Mishnayos whether or not if they want to remain married, they can remain married. There's only one Mishnah in the first parak that raises, that has the implication that there's a concern of Isser V'Heter, not just a concern of Mamonos. Which Mishnah is that? Which Mishnah is that?
First one.
Which says, B'sul Nisei Sedei Omei V'Yom Lomir Hamishi, and if the Gemara correctly intuits from that in the Bavli, the only reason why we care, what do we care? So if he wants to calm down, Shalom al Yisrael, so they won't break up the Shidduch. Everybody be happy. So you see from that Mishnah that there's a concern of Isser V'Heter as well. Now, it happens to be, as I pointed out in that shir, those last two clauses in the first Mishnah don't exist. They don't exist. Rabbi Lazar comes along in the Yushalmi and says, "Ha'omer matzah pischa pasuach hareze asura la mishum safek sota." He's telling you that the Mishnayis, where there's a machlokus about whether you believe her or you believe him, and according to Rabban Gamliel, let's say you believe her and he has to pay the money if he wants to divorce her. Rabbi Lazar says the only argument of Rabbi Yeshua is about the mamonos, about what he has to pay. But everybody agrees that she is asura to live with him, to remain with him, mishum safek sota. Maybe she committed adultery after the erusin. And Rabbi Lazar says that on every Mishnah in the first parak. Every one. There's a dispute over money, says, but asur mishum safek sota. The dispute in the Mishnah is only about money. Okay? Yeah. Now, what is Rabbi Lazar doing when he says that, by the way? He's giving the reason for Besul Anisis Le'omaravi. That's what we spoke about in this year. Yeah, I'm not going to go over the Pratim now. The Bavli, however, has Rabbi Lazar's statement. In the Bavli, the Amorah, the stomach, the Gemara, has Rabbi Lazar's statement and says that this is redundant, right? Why is Rabbi Lazar's statement redundant? Why is this? Firstly, you have to look very carefully on how the Bavli quotes Rabbi Lazar. The Bavli quotes Rabbi Elazar as saying, "Ha'omer Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Neman LaOsra Alav." Now, what does Rabbi Lazar say in the Yushalmi?
Neman.
No, he doesn't say Neman. It's about Nemanus. It's about din. If he says, if he finds Pischa Pasuach, and that could, in the Yushalmi, it doesn't have to be, it's not because he tainted Pischa Pasuach. You know what it probably means in the Yushalmi? They open up the sheet, and you know what's there? Nothing. That's what it means, Matzah Pischa Pasuach. Not because he says, oh, you know, I didn't feel any obstacles. No, it's not what he says. Matzah Pischa Pasuach. There's no dumb. Rabbi Lazar says it doesn't matter what she says and what he says and what he believes and what she believes. She's Asura Mishum Safek Sota. But you see, if you're reading this in Bavel and at the Stam of the Gemara, and you have Rabbi Lazar's statement, and you know what does the Mishnah say already? The Mishnah says that Besul Nisya Sein Ravi, Shem Hayelo Tainis Besul Hayamashkim Lebeisdin. So the Mishnah has already told you that is a chashash iser when he's got to come to Beis Din. It's not about Nemonis in the Mishnah. What happens to Rabbi Lazar's statement in the Bavli now? It becomes not a matzah pischa pasuach asura ala mishum safek sota. It's not about a din that if the reality was she wasn't the psula, she's now asura to him, no matter what he wants. What is it now? Omer pesach pasuach matzasi neman la'osalav. All of a sudden, it's about nemonus. Why do you need nemonus now in the Bavli, in the Bavli's version? Just look at the sheet. The answer is simple, because he's not tining Tainus Domin. What's he tining? Pesach Pasuach Matzasi. By Tainus Domin, you don't need Nemonos. You just look at the sheet. I know you could come up with a scenario where the sheet got lost. Rashi will say on a Gemara. But the Pasha says you don't need Nemonos. You just look at the sheet. And that's what the Torah describes. Zakhtin the Torah in Parshas Kisete. We first saw a similar Fnezek Ne'ar'ir. Right? It's very simple. Either there is blood or there isn't blood. But when it comes to Pesach Pasuach, where is the evidence? It's in his head. The question is he Nemon? Which is two questions. Number one, does he know what he's talking about? That's question number one. The Bavli on Yoram and Aleph, I think, has
the guy
who says, you know, he said, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, and Rav Nachman, I think, said, you know, give him, he's believed, give him Malkus. Because how does he search a bucky to know what a Pesach Pasuach is? Obviously, he's hanging out with the Zonos.
But doesn't that prove that it's more than just this condition that you're describing?
No. No. None at all. Why is it? Why I don't understand that. I'm not suggesting something I think is against the Gemara's kind of Pesach Pasuach. I'm trying to explain actually. I think it fits perfectly. But the Bavli says two things. Nema la Osral means number one, we believe him that he knows what he's talking about. Number two, he has Nemonus that he's not lying, even though he has no proof. Why is he Nemon? That's what the Gemara says there. Chazaka ein adam tareach besuda umafsida. Okay. So the Bavli has this idea, which I don't think is what Rav Lazar intended in the Yerushalmi. Again, it's only if you reread the entire sugya on Daf Tes, you'll see that the Amoraim and the Bavli don't necessarily understand Rav Lazar the way the stem of the Gemara does, nor do the Amoraim have the Mishnah the way we have it. They only have, I think, the first line. I think this is one of the only, maybe the only case I've ever encountered where I believe the Amoraim had the original Nusach HaMishnah, but the stem of the Gemara already has our Nusach HaMishnah. There are a lot of cases in Shas I can show you where the Mishnah and all the manuscripts read one way, but I can show you that the Gemara didn't have the Mishnah the way we have it. Rishon Nachronim point this out in various places. Here's the only case I think you can, where I think one can demonstrate or make a reasonable attempt at demonstrating that the Amoraim have the text of the Mishnah the way it was originally, but the stem of the Gemara already has our text. Okay, but with that said now, you have to accept the assumption that the Gemara, the Bavli assumes that there are two tainas that a husband can have. There's tainas domim, and there's tainas Pesach Pasuach. However you want to understand Pesach Pasuach. Okay? I'd like to understand the way I did, because I think that way would actually make sense.
Is it your assumption that
you're trying? I don't know if anybody says explicitly otherwise, but there isn't. It's not like a magic key that you put in that once you have Bia, all of a sudden Pesach Pasuach.
No, but isn't it your assumption that the majority of men would state that there was a tangible difference between the first time and subsequent times?
Well, he may not have had a subsequent time yet. So the answer is, you have to ask a professional this question, but I think that from my limited experience dealing with this particular issue as it's been brought to me, so it's not like, you're right, it's not a light switch. It's not like on or off. But that's what you get, you get a little bit of that impression from the Gemara, but I don't think it's so. In other words, I think, again, sometimes it's physiological, sometimes it's psychological. But I think that I haven't done a poll or a survey, and again, I think some of it is in people's heads. Even for the husband, I'd imagine, particularly if it's his first time, also, he may perceive, a greater rakava because he doesn't know what he's supposed to be experiencing. The second time, they're more relaxed and more comfortable. And again, remember, I'll sort of leave it at that. I think as a matter of fact, a matter of biological anatomical fact, once there's no basulim, there's no Pesach Sagar. It's a question of how relaxed the muscles are and how easy or difficult penetration is. Right? I don't think this any other way.
Isn't that clearly against what Tosos mentions, that Nassan says that even after the basulim, Mugas 8 is a Pesach Sagar?
No, it doesn't have to be that way, because in Mukas 8, again, all that means is that the Pesulim are missing. But if she hasn't had Bia until now, first time especially, you have run the same issues. The same issues.
I don't understand how the Gemara could not be saying.
Yeah, the only reason why, the only difference, Daniel, on an anatomical level, between the Pesulim are there or not there in terms of the Bia, is potentially the psychological factor or even the initial stage of pain. In other words, the pain can cause the muscles to clench up. Right, so in the absence of Basulim, she's not experiencing that pain, but there's still, when people have this condition, it's not, at least when Shahs have been brought to me, it's not a function of the presence of Basulim or not. Even when the Basulim are gone, the people who have the problem still have the problem.
Wait, so I just want to make sure.
When you have what's called an imperforable hymen, I had one case that came to me that way, where someone described it, and I said, go to the doctor, but it turned out that, you know, what was described, I was correct. When you have a case like that, there, when you cut the hymen, you're done. Right? That's literally...
I assumed all the cases you were describing was like that.
No, it's... there are different kinds. There are imperforable hymens in various kinds. That requires, you know, being cut one way or the other, but that's not... that the basulum are intact there. When you cut them, there's going to be bleeding. Right, but if you remove the basulum completely, you still can have, you know, you still, this other condition still exists. It will not change just because you remove the basulum. I can't say never, but it's not generally the case.
That's not what I'm trying to say. But the Gemara is definitely assuming that if the Baal finds a Pesach Pasuach that is automatic, that means we can really consider her Geula.
We believe him that it was what.
The fact we believe him because of
we believe him that he really
only for an Isser, though.
What's that?
We only believe him in as far as there's an Isser.
No, we believe him and he can be mastered for the Ksuba.
That's the Maskana.
That's the Gemara. That's the Maskana of the Gemara that has. And Daf Yud. Right? Omer Pesach Pasuach Basasi. No, and La Vadalasi the Ksubasa. Because Ein Adam Tarech Pesuda Masida. No, the whole point of the Osra love is why the Gemara is going to say there, by the way, that most women, unless it's a single suffix, it's a sfeik sfeika and the mutaris anyway. Mitaris veheta. It's nem on the Osra love to be master and master. Oh, you know what? I should take that back. It's not Rav Lazar's statement. It's somebody else's statement. Daf Yud, Rav Nachman, I think, said it. Rav Nachman, Rav Shumi, Shumi, Lazar. Where is it? No. I thought it said Befeirush. Well, the version of Rav Nachman, the name is Shmuel, as Chachamim Titnu, what they did in Ksuba, Behem Heminu Shem Amar Pesach Pasuach Matzasi Neman.
Look at Rashi.
And that's Lafsida. Which Rashi?
Rashi on Tetam and Olive, the second Rashi, which is probably an illustrious statement.
No, correct. I agree that the Gemara is about to qualify. And the Gemara say it's enough to create a Safek. It's enough to create a suffix, and if it's a single suffix, she is Asura.
If it's Rashi, just the Alamein of the Gemara, then it's Maskana, is even according to Abelazar, it's Aflapsida Ketubata.
Yeah. Right now, Rashi's not talking about the... Oh, I'm sorry. I take it back. Correct.
I'm saying this...
Correct. I says Avalapsida Ketubata Lo Meheman.
Should the Gemara then go back on that? Because I thought this was the Maskana.
No, because then you wouldn't say Chazaka in Adam Tarech Pesuda Mafsida. I think it's the cost of the Ksuba. The Gemara says Befeirush.
But wasn't that Gemara going on up to Fenomora or something? The
Gemara on top of Yoram and Aleph.
Rav
Lazar might hold that, yes, she's entitled to Ksuba. But Rav Nachman says on Yoram and Aleph that she's not entitled to Ksuba. He's now even Lafsida Ksubasa because Ksuba is the Rabbanon. The way Rashi reads the Gemara, Ksuba is the Rabbanon, and the Chachamu Mesakin to believe in Kasasaka and Adam Tarech Besuda Masida. I think so. I believe so.
The Gemara is definitely passing that the Pasuach is a clear 100% indicator of being a Be'ula. You can't have a Pesach Pasuach if you're
correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. So anyway. So those are the two kinds of Tainas Besulim that we have. Tainas Besulim, Tainas Damim, and Tainas Pesach Pasuach. Tainas Damim is black on white, or red on white. Tainas Pesach Pasuach is obviously not as clear. Now, another issue, just as background to Rav's statement. Al Pi Din Torah, only Dam Habam and HaMokar is Tameh. Only uterine bleeding from the breakdown of the endometrial lining of the uterus is considered dam nida. We would probably say hormonal bleeding. If a woman has a maka, either in the uterus, which is hard to know that it's just a maka, or she has a maka in the cervix or the vaginal canal, that dam is not a problem. It always takes a question, how do you determine whether or not the dam is dam maka or dam nida, but assuming you could determine it's dam maka. There is one exception to this rule. The exception to the rule is dam besulam. Dam from the breaking of the hymen. And the halacha is bisman hazeh, the dam besulam we treat as dam nida. They only have one minor kula. I don't remember if it's only, sometimes it's unfortunate, it can be really unpleasant, where you can have multiple bleedings from dam besulam, meaning they have bia rishona, but it doesn't totally destroy the hymen. And so she waits X days, starts counting shivanikim, goes to the mikveh, they bia again, and you could have bleeding again from dam besulam. This does sometimes happen. So din Torah, that dam would have been absolutely torn, not a problem. But based upon the Mishnah and then subsequently, you know, well, may not bisman hazeh, it's really the din of the Mishnah. So we say that the dam besulam is treated like dam nida. So there is a Mishnah. There is a Mishnah.
You said there was one kula.
The one kula is certainly after the first night is that. For those who know Hilchos Nida, there are how many married people there? One married person? Maybe that's married? No, okay. So for those who are married, know Hilchos Nida, or those who are learning Hilchos Nida because they're getting married, or just learning Hilchos Nida because they're learning Hilchos Nida, because one day they hopefully get married. So the halacha is that a woman cannot start counting Shivanikim until she stops bleeding. That's given, because we machmir to count Shivanikim for Nida. But even if she's barely bled, she bleeds for a day or two, so Ashkenazic practice is that she cannot start counting until 5 days have passed. It has to do with some chashash of poleta shechvasera and so on. Svardim are mekel, the mechaber is mekel for 4 days, and he has other kulas as well. For women who get their period, their regular period, it's not usually an issue, because most women bleed at least that amount, at least 5 days, not all, but most women bleed that amount of time, so really this chashash of poleta shechvasera doesn't create much of a chumrah. But in the case of dam besulam, where after a day she may not be bleeding anymore because it may have healed enough that it's not bleeding. So nonetheless, we don't make her wait 5 days. 4 days is sufficient. What kalas usually do, so that you don't get hit twice, is what they usually plan to do. They use hormones to at least to make sure that they don't have a chupas nida, and then they try to arrange it that they'll get their period a couple of days after the wedding. So they'll have birishona. She becomes a nida because of dam besulam, but then she becomes a real nida, when she gets her period, and then this way you don't get hit potentially back to back. In that case, you would in the case of dam. But when you have dam nida. From the time that you were initially poresh, from a woman was poresh from her husband, you need to count 5 days. So anyway, before you can count Shivanikim. So with regards to Dam Besulim, the Mishnah at the beginning of the 10th Perek of Nida, the first Mishnah, states that a tinokas shaloi gizman aliros, if a young girl, a katana, gets married and she hasn't reached puberty, she's not the age of puberty, let's say she's 11 years old or something like that, she gets married, so the Mishnah says that we don't treat her dam, besulim, as dam nida until a certain period of time. Beis Shammai says you get 4 nights. After that, any bleeding after the first 4 nights is considered dam nida. And Beis Hillel says, until the maka is healed, you can keep attributing the dam to dam besulim and not treat it as dam nida. If she is old enough to have gotten her period but hasn't gotten her period yet, so then Beis Hillel says, Beis Shammai says, the entire first night, as many bios as they do, Beis Hillel says up to four nights. And if she already has gotten her period, so then Beis Shammai says you only get Bia Rishona, and Beis Hillel says you get Laila Rishona. And then the Gemara turns around and says that Nimnu V'Gamru, that it's not Beferish in the Gemara, but the way that Sifrei Pesach interpret the din is that it doesn't matter where she is, all Dam Besulam is treated like Dam Nida, which means that a Chasan Lekal, the night they get married, if she's a Besula, basically have Bia Rishona, as soon as he withdraws from her, she is treated as a Nida, and they sleep in separate beds, and so on and so forth. It may not be the most romantic notion, but that is the Halacha. That's Halacha Pesuka and Shulchan Aruch. So that's what the Mishnah says at the beginning of the 10th Parak. So comes along Rav, and Rav says, Go ahead. Okay, so right now Rav says that a Bogeres, forget how this fits in with the final din, that a Bogeres only gets Laila Harishon. Right? Laila Harishon we can attribute to the Besulim, but other than that, and his din might, I imagine, would be even if Lo Rasa. Even if Lo Rasa, she only can attribute the first night to the Besulim. After that, not. So what's the stira? Yes. So that's the Gemara's kasha, right? If you say in latanis basulim, it means you don't expect there to get any bleeding. So why, by the bogeres, should we be no spin alayla harishon? It means we're expecting that she's going to bleed. But you just said a basula, a bogeres in latanis basulim. If you really believe a woman's not a basula, you can't be tola the dam the first night on the basulim. Either you find that it's a regular makkah and she's tohara, or you have to assume it's dam nida. So what's Rav saying? The Bogeres nosa laila rishon, that after the first bia, if they do bedikos on themselves and they find blood, you can say, that's the besulim. So you see what? You see that a Bogeres does have besulim, does it? And therefore, if you expect that she might bleed from the besulim, then it should be yesh la tainis besulim. There is an expectation that she is a besula. There's an expectation that it should show itself. And therefore, you should say Bogeres yesh la tainis besulim. So the Gemara answers... This is Rashi's Girsa, and most of the Rishonim like this Girsa. Ooh, so the Gemara says you're right. If you were Toein Tanas Damim. So then, Bogeres Yesh Lo Tanas Damim. But let's say you're not coming to be Toein Tanas Damim. So why are you not Toein Tanas Damim?
She's from a special family that doesn't bleed.
So that's one Teretz. She's from Mishpachas Dorkati. Okay, Dorkatua, the Gemara says, by the way, the Gemara, it's not crazy, actually, in the sense that it makes sense. If a woman doesn't get her period, she's probably going to experience infertility issues. Right? It means that the hormonal processes in her reproductive system are not working normally. So that's what the Gemara talks about. I don't understand the first part. Mishpachas Dorkati, she'en lahem, neither... Dam Nida, that I understand, or Dam Besulim, that I don't understand. The whole family doesn't Dam Besulim. Ironically, Dam Besulim, not having Dam Besulim, if it's due to some anatomical anomaly, you could imagine why it might be heritable. But if you don't have Dam Nida, it's hard to imagine it's heritable. Why? Because you're not going to reproduce. Right, so I didn't quite understand. So obviously, Ein Lahem Dam Nida probably means they have less. It means they're much less fertile. It can't mean they're not fertile at all. Otherwise, the mishpacha, they call it dorkati, is dorkatua, but they wouldn't exist anymore. Maybe they don't exist anymore, but they wouldn't have even existed then. Right?
Could it maybe be talking about one generation? Maybe when it's mishpacha dorkati, doesn't
it? It sounded like it was a specific family.
It could be recessive.
Maybe. So Rashi says, well, they lost the sheet. Okay. So the Gemara says, Yikata Tain Times Tanachanami, that Yeshua Tanis Pesulim, but here he's telling Tesla Pesach Pesulim. So why doesn't he have Tainis Pesulim?
Rashi says because by the time you have Bogeres, you're
right. When she grows bigger, anatomically speaking. It's true, by the way, in the process of puberty. One of the things that happens in puberty for most women is that the hips widen. More so than perhaps other parts of the body, right? That when boys go through puberty, the hips widen also, but so does everything else. In the same proportion, right? In other words, that's the shape of a male is this. There's a reason why they describe the shape of a woman as an hourglass. Bottom line is that a Bogeres you don't expect to be Rach Motzar. Note here, by the way, this is a footnote going looking forward to next year. What does the term Rechem here mean? What does the term Rechem normally mean?
Womb.
Womb. But if you look in rabbinic usage, Rechem has another meaning and refers to the vaginal canal. Because in the context of intercourse, said by definition, you never have any penetration of the womb, of the uterus. Right, so it happens to be in rabbinic literature, the term, in biblical literature, the term rechem probably really always means womb. But in Chazal, rechem can mean more the womb, but it could also be the vaginal canal. It can be the malkum of Bia. So here Rashi says, "Ein rachma tzar kevatchila," but it's not just Rashi. This is a usage you'll find in Chazal. Okay. So, the Gemara here is suggesting, according to Rashi's Girsa, that a bogeres has tainas dam, it means she has bleeding, but it's not rach matzar. Okay, that's not so unreasonable. There is, however, a Gemara Nivamos that some Rishonim thought maybe creates a problem. And you learn that Gemara Nivamos. But we didn't really think about it in this context. What is the din of a Kohen Gadol marrying a bogeres? What? You don't even have to do Daf Yomi for this. Daf Yomi, which we'll be finishing, as many of you know, Yevamos tomorrow. Right, tomorrow it finishes. And the Mishnah, which we encountered earlier in the year, the Mishnah states, Kohen Gadol lo yisa almana, velo yisa es habogeres, Reb Elazar, Reb Shimon, machshir and bebogeres. It's machlokes hatanaim. The Chachamim, the Tanakama prohibits a bogeres. Why? So the Gemara has explained, it's based upon the Pesukim, that v'hu isha b'v'sula yikach. So one Tana says, prat lebogera shekalu b'sulaha. So if kalu b'sulim, then why is there bleeding? So the answer is, doesn't mean kalu legamri. It means they're partially disintegrated. It doesn't mean they're totally gone. Okay. But Tosfos here notes, okay, and who is doing the reading for me? Hello, Matt.
Okay. Kafkaris, the countries, Rabir, Fanado, Goris, Ikra. Moshe, Haya, Katu, Basfari, Igata, Idika, Talayatala, Patatua, Pachadami, Shakur.
Now, ask yourself a question. How does this answer the question? Gemara's kasha was as follows, and let's read Rabbeinu Hananel into the Gemara. We say the Gemara asked that a bogeres, the Braisa says, ein la tainas basulim, and the thinking was if ein la tainas basulim, it means she's not going to show the signs of a basula. So the Gemara answers that's true, but we give a bogeres. We give a bogeres laila rishona, and we are tola the dam she sees on the dam besulim. You turn around and you answer no. When do we say ein latinus besulim? When we say ein latinus besulim, if he's toein pesach pasuach, but if he's toein tainas damim, when do we say ein latinus pasulim? When he's toein pesach pasuach. No, I got when he's toein tainas damim. Right, when he's toein tainas damim, that's when we say ein latinus pasulim. But if he's toein tainas pesach pasuach, then yesh lo tainus pasulim. In other words, we don't expect there to be bleeding, but we do expect her pesach to be sagor. So if that's the case, once again, if we don't expect her to be bleeding, why does Rav say that you can be tole? Why does Rav say that you can be tole her bleeding the first night on her besulim? You just said that he has no taina when she doesn't have dam besulim because we don't expect her to have dam besulim. We do expect her pesach to be sagur. So according to Rashi, the Gemara's answer is reverse, makes perfect sense. That we do expect there to be dam in there. And if he has tainas damim, yesh lo tainas pasulim. But if he has tainas pes pasuah, we believe that a bogeres already is pischas not so sagur. Yes?
Why can't you just suggest that you assume there's not going to be dam there? If on Biur Yishona you notice dam, it must be that this woman is in the minority of cases. It does have Tom there, and then therefore Rav would come
so
in.
So that's nice, except
if you
for
to do subsequent times that night, then it would just be the
So The Rabbeinu Hananel assumes that when we say a bogeres ein la damim, it doesn't mean she has no bogeres has damim. It means many don't have damim. Many don't have damim. One second. That's why there's no tainus basulim. But then the question is, how can you attribute the blood? Well, if you find blood, you attribute it to those some women who do so. So a number of Mishonim say this for the Rabbeinu Hananel, but then what's the problem?
So why can you make it? Why is your tainus basulim?
Hold on. The Ramban, a number of Rishonim point this out. The Gemara's answer should have been, in other words, if in fact the Mishnah is talking about Ta'an Tanas Damim, the Braisa, and Ein La Tanis Basulim, and Rav said that it, which implies she has no bleeding, and Rav said that she has bleeding, then the answer should have been that those bogros who bleed, and that those bogros who don't bleed. What does Pesach Pasuach have to do with here? Why say ida katayin tainis pesach pasuach hachanami hachamaiskin ida katayin tainis damim? What is pesach pasuach doing? Anything? Just say. Sometimes there's tainis, sometimes there's bleeding, sometimes there's not. Rav says that if you find bleeding, you can be told it on the basulim that she's from the, maybe it's a minority of women who bleed. But if he doesn't find any dam, we can say that she's a basula. It's just that she happens not to have dam. That's why ein la tainis damim.
No, I think it makes sense. You're just saying that
yes, yes, and you should. The Gemara's answer should have been Yesh Bogros to Islam Dam and Yesh Bogros Shalom Dam. Why does Pesach Pasuach have to say the Braisa says that a Bogeris has no Tainus Pasulim, which means a Bogeris has no Tainus Damim. That's talking about a case of a girl happens to be no bleeding by that Bogeris. When Rav says that no son Lila Rishon, he's assuming that when we find blood, this is the Bogeris, be it a minority or not, who happens to bleed. What does Pesach Pasuach have to do with anything? Yes.
Just a question. Is Rabbeinu Hananel cholek on which ones in time the Maliyot are with Rashi also, or just on the order of the
three? No.
He wouldn't say.
No. Everybody would agree. Everybody agrees that Taina's Dhamma is a better Taina. Hareshar Shachot Lefanecha.
I mean, you take that as a Dhamma Pasha, but it could be the blood was lost, something happened, this or that.
No. Okay. You ask me, it's hard to envision anybody saying that Pesach Pasuach has a better taina. Even when you look at the sugi and the Bavli and Daftes, the Gemara says, "My lav the katan Pesach Pasuach." The answer is, in other words, they wanted to bring a riot to Reb Lasser from the first Mishnah, so they said, "My lav the katan Pesach Pasuach." The Gemara says, "No, the katan taina is damim." Right? In other words, taina is damim is a more obvious taina than taina is Pesach Pasuach. Okay. So now continue, huh? Yeah. Well, the ale. What?
We're not answering the question.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I interrupted your question. My question interrupted your question on Rabbeinu Hananel.
Well, I just explained. In other words, that is the question, Rabbeinu Hananel. In other words, the Gemara's answer is wrong. Why does the Gemara mention Pesach Pasuach? It should have just said, Yesh Bogeres Sheyesh L'Adam, V'Yesh Bogeres Sheyesh L'Adam. That would have been the end.
So we're not going to try to be the
Asher for Rabbeinu. Oh, I don't know how you've been the Asher for Rabbeinu
Hananel.
Well, no, the problem is he didn't have that as the girsa. He just had our girsa reversed. Ida katan tainas pesach pasuach hachnami. Hachav maeskin the katan tainas damim.
He has a rational explanation, but he can't really explain.
So he might have to totally amend the girsa. Could be.
Were you just okay with a non-perfect fit because that's the girsa he has?
Well, I understand, but then the point is the girsa makes no sense. It doesn't answer the question properly.
It answers the question, just throws in an extraneous detail.
Correct, and it doesn't. And the ikar chaser mena sefer. The issue is not that he has tainus dam in this case. The issue is that some bogers have dam, some bogers don't have dam. That's what's missing from the gemara. The teretz isn't there. It's not just that it mentions pesach pasuach, which is extraneous. It's that the answer itself of some bogers have dam and some don't isn't there according to Rabbeinu Hananel. He doesn't have it in his girsa. That's what the Ramban says. That the lishta of the Gemara lo diakachi the hava and the memory iga this lavi kad lesla. What's that?
That's what I was trying to think before with my question. That's why the Ramban and Dhamim, whereas Betamatuach they would all have across the board, whether or not the Dhamim dried up or something.
So it dried up, you still see it. Okay. Anyway, so now the Tosos continues. So L, with Parakama Pei Rashi. Go ahead. So Rabbeinu Hananel says in the first parak, Legabe Mukaseitz, that Ein Landamim Epischanaol, which there he says the same thing as by a Bogeres. Everybody agrees that by a Mukaseitz she doesn't have Dam. I think everybody would agree to that. But Rabbeinu Hananel wants to say the same thing by Bogeres, that Pischa is Na'u, but Ein Ladam. Im Kain. Going back to the Gemara in Amud Aleph, which is, why did the Gemara, one Brisa said that a Chereshes is presumed to be a Besula. One Brisa said that, in other words, one Brisa says that that Yesh Latinus Besulam, one says in effect Ein Latinus Besulam. So why did the Gemara have to say Harabim Malil HaRabbi Yoshua? Why didn't they just say that a Bogeres who is Becheskas might be a Mukaseitz, say that the Braisa that says that Chereshes Yesh Lo Tainis Pesulim, that's if he has Tainis Pesach Pasuach. And the Braisa that says that Ein Lo Tainis Pesulim, that's if he claims Tainis Damim. He says Tainis Damim, we say, yeah, we don't expect her to have bleeding because she's a Mukaseitz. So Tosa says the Gemara didn't have to come on to the whole complicated. If the Gemara knew this already, and it gives the territory, it didn't have to come on to the answer of Haman Gleir Rabbi Yoshua if Rabbi Nochanan was correct. Okay. Go ahead. B'shema. So good. The Havamatzi the Shenuye. Okay. You know what? We'll work on this last part of Tosos tomorrow. What I would like you to do for tomorrow is to take a look at any of the Rishonim early. You can look at the Ramban just so you see his analysis of Rabbeinu Hananel. Any of the Rishonim, the Ramban or the Rashba are fine. Right here. Maybe if I remember, if you remind me, I'll send out a copy. You can get it off the Bar Ilan. I'd like you to finish the Tosfos. And then when you go into the next next piece of Summa, so there are two issues we have to deal with. The one that's explicit, which is the Machlokas Rashi and Tosos of what is the Gemara's answer to the Stira. But even more interesting to me, something that is against what I've been telling you about Mekach Tos generally, there's a line in two Rashis, Rashi Dibamaschil Umaros Le'imon, and Rashi, the following Rashi, V'zo Eino Roa V'Eino Mara Le'ima. So Rashi says something in those two Dibamaschils which is astounding. The explanation that he gives is unnecessary according to Tosus' interpretation. Tosus doesn't say he's rejecting Rashi for what you will see is the obvious question, but I want you to think long and hard about why Rashi says what he says about Mekach Tos, and the answer may lie in the discussion that we began share with earlier today about the nature of the Taina of Mukas Eitz, and what I'll call something that is not a Hata'a Gemura. You can think about that. You may or may not think that it's that they're connected with one another. Okay, but again, take a look maybe at the Ramban on this, the end of Tosfos, and in the next sugya, both Tosfos and then those two, in particular, those two Rashis. And if you're particularly interested, it's a cute little pshat, the Ritva, at the end of the Summa piece, which is the next piece, quotes a not his Rebbe the Ra'ah, but his Rebbe's brother, Rav Pinchas Achi Rav Aaron Halevi. What's that? Do we know?
No.
But the brother of the Ra'ah, who has a very clever reading of the Gemara, So if you're interested, you can take a look at that as well. Okay.
Which is more fun.